major monograph. That's Robert and Paul. These are his beautiful artworks here. Anyway, so I'll let you guys get started. Thank you.
I want to congratulate Paul on this show. I think it's absolutely fabulous. Can everybody hear us?
Yes.
And it's a wonderful watershed show, and the reason why I wrote the introduction is because it helps, perhaps, to build credibility so that when I'm asking questions, you sort of say, oh, maybe he knows what he's talking about. But with Paul, I met Paul in 2006 when he had this wonderful exhibition in New York. And my wife, Jane Crutchfield, who is here, and I kept going back to the show again and again and again. We were totally bowled over, and we asked his gallerist if we could meet Paul. And so we had lunch, and we spent the afternoon, and we've been friends ever since. And it's been really wonderful. Just to give you a little bit of an idea of the background of Paul, what we're going to do tonight is I thought I would ask questions sort of going back to the beginning and bringing up to the present, and then we will look at some of these. And Paul came from a suburb of London, Guildford. His parents are Irish immigrants living in the UK. And he went to really good schools in the UK, Central St. Martin's College of Art and Design, and how do you pronounce it?
Winchester.
School of Art, where he got his BA in 1997. He wrote a paper on Jack Pearson, and he did show it to me, and I've read it, and it is truly a brilliant paper. And his professor was friends with Jack, or he knew it.
I sent him the paper through the publisher of his first book.
Paul's going to keep me honest. Anyway, Jack was very impressed with the paper. And one of the things that impressed me is rather than writing a puff piece, he was looking at Jack Pearson in terms of Richard Dyer's book Stars, and where one is not, born a major artist, but one works within certain sociological conditions that contribute to who one is and the art one makes. And it was a very Foucauldian-oriented study, and it's really, really wonderful. And you had your first show, Jack helped to sponsor you, coming to the U.S.,
yep.
And you lived in Provincetown for a while, and his first show here in the U.S. was at the Provincetown Schoolhouse. And the title of it was Olympus. And could you talk about that? Because you had cameras, sort of built things that were like cameras.
I was making the cameras from clay. They kind of had different things coming out of them. I think I was trying to sort of think about cameras as dirt and try and sort of... That also as kind of like a station in between the world and the viewer or something. And it was like this, I was trying to figure out, like, making something that seemed, like, think about images but make them more real or something. And that sort of led to me sort of taking photographs and dissecting and cutting up photographs and somehow making them sort of more truthful or more in the world, which is part of what I was interested in Jack's work for, was because he was taking blurry photographs,
mm-hmm.
And so you couldn't really see the image. You kind of had to sort of see it. You were allowed to use things that you knew and bring them into the photograph and try and understand what the image was or sort of things like that. So it was sort of breaking down photography and. Yeah, that was what interested me about the camera. It was like...
Can we take a step back?
Yes.
And Paul is from Guildford. And Guildford had they made cameras.
Yes.
And your brother Michael has a connection with cameras. Can you talk about both of these circumstances?
Oh, well...
Or situations?
My brother had a 35mm camera that I brought with me to America, and I used it. And... And also in Ilford, where I come from, it was sort of, I would see like Ilford around everywhere because I worked on photo shoots and things like that, and the Ilford paper was everywhere. And it became this kind of thing where it was like making think of home, but it was photo paper, and the factory used to be where they made it was where the supermarket that I worked when I was growing up was. So it was kind of this sort of weird thing where I would like think about Ilford as like paper as this sort of portal or something that was about growing up and being home, being at home. And I, the thing with my brother's camera was that was also sort of like a sort of became sort of like a solid thing, that was like a memory of my brother who passed away. So
how soon did you pass away? How long was it since his death that you started these cameras?
I think it was just like around sort of the same, just after or something like a year. So I was sort of thinking about that as well, and they just became all of a sudden like the cameras became these kind of organisms or something a little bit in a way. Because like one, I sort of made it, I had to put an elephant's trunk on the front of it, like it became an animal, and some I put like shells on, and different, I don't know, it was like the thing that was used to look at the thing, look at the world, became part of the world or something.
Okay. One of the things about cameras that I think is quite fascinating is that you were really coming of age, mm-hmm. a good 25, 30 years after postmodernism got started. Mm-hmm. And with your first show here in New York with Massimo Dello, one of the things you were interested in, or Massimo talked about it, as a romance, as a way of how does one connect after a period of postmodern cynicism, mm-hmm. and that you were wanting to reach out and connect. And I think we talked about the Genet film, mm-hmm. Le Chant d'Amour, in which you talk about this desire to connect in a world which has been very cynical about any kind of connection.
Yeah, I think that, you know, desire was a question for me always, like my desire as a gay person, and I think that somehow these kind of everyday objects that I was bringing into the photographs and giving them life and all the washcloths, you know, the idea of water inside of the images that can pass from one object to another, and in referring back to the Genet film, there was there's a moment where they blow smoke into each other's lungs and through a wall, and that idea of connection, and I don't know, it was almost it's sort of putting something, like displaying something that belongs in between, like two people connecting together or something, and I don't know if I can, if I'm explaining myself very well.
But I think you are, but for those of you who haven't seen the Genet film, there's a really interesting sequence in which there's an older prisoner and a younger prisoner, and there's a hole in the wall, and the older, I don't remember whether it's the older or the younger one, takes a straw and is smoking a cigarette and blows the smoke through the wall. So if you think of this film in terms of a great barrier between one prisoner in the cell, another prisoner in the cell, and how you break down that barrier between the two, the straw then becomes very important. And I think in terms of the cameras, then get moved into the next year, this show that you had in New York, when you took soda cans, drink cans, it's almost like the straw and the drink can. Yeah. You want to talk about that?
Well, I almost feel like the can became kind of the lens inside of the image, because the image was wrapped around the can. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that was looking, doing the seeing, was also part of the thing that was being seen or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
would you talk about the image? Would you show us one image in particular? You used Matt Damon earlier.
I did. I used all sorts of Hollywood movie stars early on in collages and stuff. And then I found this one image of the face. There were two guys next to each other in a, it was like a 50s kind of gay porn magazine, but it wasn't really pornography. They were more just people posing, and it was a friend, I saw it through a friend who had it, and it was amazing. It was called Tiger Man or something, and I don't know, I felt like fascinating object. The photo, the quality of the photo in the interview was really beautiful, and but part of me couldn't help but think, what happened to these people in these pictures, you know, because it would have happened before, like the AIDS crisis, and it's just sort of, I would think about those things around it, and I don't know, this one face in particular was, I've used it on the cancer cultures ever since, and for some reason I don't think about why too much about that, but it's a familiar face, you know, and it's almost sort of trying to sort of give it a new life, or...
It seems very, a number of people have described it as classical.
Yes, it's definitely
and it
classical.
Like, go ahead.
I think that, I was thinking about this today, about how I'm really interested in generic objects, like cans and washcloths and tambourines, like anything that's like sort of generic, and I was thinking about how the generic sort of relates to the classical in a lot of ways, because it's like a universal form.
Mm-hmm.
That everybody can relate to and understand, and I think I was perspective.
Well, let's go back to the show. In 2006, I think one of the things that blew me away, because you were using materials that I had never thought of being used for sculpture, such as baptisms and washcloths, and they appeared to be used washcloths and towels, and some of them you dyed. Why the selection, and how does this fit in? You talked about it in relationship to design, and about presence and absence.
Well, I feel like the washcloth, as it passes over the body, absorbs the water and something of the person, and then it dries, and as it dries, the water evaporates into the space around us, and so there's that kind of poetry to that. I was also thinking, I was dyeing different colours, and the different colours of each washcloth sort of represented a different closeness to the person that had left the washcloth behind, like a green related to the landscape, and then blue talked about kind of water and sky, and yellow talked about sunlight, and purple was like a cross, you know, a warm colour between hot and cold, red and blue. So I started to sort of think about colour as a language, and I don't know, the washcloths once they were put on the wall, they became pictures. So I started to think about them as like interacting with the pictorial space, and in a way, they're like prints, because I would soak them in ink, and then that's how they would get their colours, and which is sort of like processing an image of a photo. So, to me, it's really just a simple thing that they've once passed over the body, and in that way, sort of. I always think about rain in this way, as it pours over the landscape, it kind of makes a drawing of the landscape as it stops on everything it lands on. And I think that I sort of thought about the washcloth as something similar to that. Like it was taking a sort of, almost taking a photograph of the person that lived behind.
Yes, I love that idea. It seemed to me one of the things that I first had to come to terms with in seeing your art is you were not developing metaphors so much as metonyms. A metonym is a poetic trope for something that is associated or connected, like, you know, an outfit would have a hat and a coat and other things that belong together. And here you have the towels that belong in a situation, but the situation is missing.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of the work that you want the viewer to do with this sense of absence, could you describe that or talk about it? And could you also bring in your interest in gay bath culture, which was practically erased because of the AIDS virus? And it's a culture that you were never able to participate in because of your age, growing up in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was just something that I had heard of, and I was interested in gay history, obviously, and the bath culture, I feel like the towel also sort of related to any sort of situation where the body is you know, a naked body, and terms of what the work that I want the viewer to do is that I really want the viewer to bring something, to bring their own thing and have it inside them as a truth and an understanding of the object that's in the artwork. And so when they come to the artwork, they bring part of themselves is involved in them looking at the artwork in a way. Okay. So in terms of that's the sort of work that we mean, like about what I want to be able to do.
Indeed. When I was preparing for this, I looked back at some of your statements, and there's one statement I would love for you to discuss. And it's the questioning the role of the image. Mm-hmm. It seems a lot of people want to create an image, which is representational art is always different from what it's represented. It becomes something different. And you said, an image implies something resolved, and it's actually a closed space in that way. I am not making pictures, I am implying them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's...
I like that statement a lot.
I guess that's true because the picture isn't complete until the viewer is looking at it, and I also think about this idea of you can only really see something that you can't see all of because you complete it or something. That's sort of related to that in a way, I guess. But yeah, I feel like I don't make images. Yeah, I think I want to make the things that, like what I talked about how they interact, they're completed by the viewer. You know? Mm. And I feel like an image, I guess, can do that too. Because the viewer does still bring stuff to an image. So, this is a difficult spot for me to think about, to rethink that.
How do you bring that in connection with what you just mentioned earlier about the station and the camera, which is the station or place between what is represented and the viewer, someone at the other end, or this connection that you wanted to make? Or at least establish.
Well, I guess the towel or the tambourine becomes like the camera in the way that it's the station. Maybe the station is missing from an image.
You mean because it's too close?
Well, because that the structure of how it's made and what it's made by is missing. So therefore, you don't understand the complete truth of it.
Mm.
Or something.
Several writers talked about your gay coding of the early work. A great deal has happened in the last few years. I think we have, a presidential hopeful who is gay. There are a number of gay mayors who are doing incredible jobs. Do you feel that some of the ideas that were of grave concern to you, say, 15 years ago, mm-hmm. are as necessary? Or does the change in the social circumstances change the way we see those works, if they're open-ended and not closed images?
Well, I feel like this front room of this show in particular is really vibrant and defiant and positive, and that is, I think, part of this development that you're talking about, but I also feel that I was made by the things that I experienced and the generation that I grew up in, and how I respond or react to that, like that's not going to go away because it made me who I am. And but I feel that I do feel that my work is political, even if it's positive or something, like
not critical, not negative. You're saying it's political in an affirmative way.
Yeah, or I'm trying to sort of. I feel like these paintings almost sort of. I work really intuitively, so a lot of things come to me like as the process is occurring. But I sort of feel that these paintings are almost like a celebration of oppression or something.
Now, what do you mean by celebration of oppression? Great term.
Just that they glorify. They're like they they're sort of contained and they can't be used. And they're tambourines, which are so free and for everybody and diplomatic and fun. And you kind of stop seeing that that the, how they've been robbed of that in the works. You sort of, they're still joyous or something. They're allowed, like, they're given a new usage and a new path and a new life or something that is positive and is in is proud and like in the community and part of the people that are sharing the space with you.
Let's go back to your use of tambourines. Because in the 2006 show, you didn't have them. They came in later, and you talked about tambourine as something that's held by the hand.
Yeah.
And you were very interested in the Richard Serra video of catching lead.
Yeah, yeah.
Very famous early video. But you also described the tambourines in terms of skin.
Uh-huh.
And would you talk about that, and then in relationship to these paintings?
Well, I was working with the towels, and I think for the book, I was thinking just about how to develop more work and move on and bring in a different element into the work, and I was thinking, what can I use to, you know, represent the body? Because I started to think of the towel as being the vessel for the landscape, and then I just thought, what could be the skin? And I thought a tambourine, and it does resemble a sort of small canvas with the nails around the sides, and I started to think about it, and then it just didn't leave, and I would think about it more, and then I got one, and I just felt like this is actually something that I can use to explain how I feel about, like, the body or something, I felt like I could explain things with it or something.
You did a whole series of tambourines where you had the tambourine and then you had something in front of it, so it was oftentimes blocky.
Yeah.
And you did it in a series of colors.
Uh-huh.
And when I asked you about it, when you started this series, you said you see something because of something interrupting what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that go back to the station, or what are you referring to in terms of you see something when it's interrupted? It's a very compelling idea.
I guess because you have to, as the person looking at the thing, there's something missing or something, and you have to complete that. It uses something that you bring that is part of you to what you're looking at. And I guess you don't literally really see what you're looking at if it's blocked, but there was just something here. It was this idea of, like, truth. You know, like, it was a truth to what you were looking at. You couldn't see all of it, because you never do see everything or whatever. Most of the time we see imagery, it's through advertising or whatever. It's for a reason. It's to sell something. And I guess it's sort of like, it was like the language of, I guess it was like the language of not, it's like the language of lies or something. It could be like the language of lies, if you want to think about it in that way, like free in a way, or because it's what tries to sell you everything, you know. How it's the form that's used to try.
Well, in this essay that I was privileged to write for this blog, you in conversation had mentioned a division between the body and the mind, which seems to me to fit in with the early cameras, with the stations, with the Junet film, with the idea of a barrier and breaking down a barrier. And it seems to me in these paintings, one of the things you're going after is, of course, the whole history of geometric abstraction, which, for those of us in the room of a certain generation, we may remember Clement Greenberg and all of his ideas about the idea that a work of art has a visual presence, and it's only a visual presence, and it is self-contained and about itself. And you're connecting or breaking this up with something that is a handheld object, even though you're stilling the tambourine. And you refer to the tambourine surface on a number of occasions as a skin. And it seems to me you're breaking down a huge tradition in terms of vision and hand. Would you agree with that, or do you see something else at work?
Yeah, I mean, I think I,
I'm not directly thinking so much about the art historical kind of thing and trying to do that. But I think that they're allowed to exist for me as artworks that I can present to the world, because I do feel that they do something different, that it's not about pictures. They're not really painting, they're sculptures in a way, really. And the first ones I made, had a rectangle painting along the tambourines, and so they turned them into screens. And I was thinking about how images now, you touch them and you move through them and you interact with them in sort of a bigger, in a greater sort of social way. Like an image is a space now that you move through, and I don't know. So they do speak to that kind of different way of looking and seeing in the world, the way of technology and how we interact with images. And so I do think that they do something different.
Did you feel the need to break all these canvases up in two parts?
Well, the first ones I was doing, I think I stopped having the object on the front of the tambourine and bringing the tambourine into the paintings 2 years ago, and I started with, like, they were one size, the panel, which was a big scale leap for me in terms of painting. And I was like, I didn't think I'd be able to make them bigger, because to make a big giant canvas like that is difficult. So, practically. So it was a practical thing. I was just out looking at art, and I saw a show that then the painting was maybe two panels, and I thought, I can make these larger, because I can actually handle two panels. But something actually interesting happened while I was working on that, especially on the one that there's a completely black panel, the panel sort of...
You mean the second one?
Yeah, the panel then became an object, because it was sort of a redundant thing, it was just one colour. So then the painting, in a way, would relate back to the tambourine, in the way that it was that single canvas became an object in itself or something. And so I sort of like how it sort of... I don't really think about the panel in terms of that they're panels, but I like in this one how the panels are locked together by the image. So it was more just sort of like a practical thing.
Okay, well, sometimes practical things have enormous benefits beyond metaphysical meanings. You have made the statement, which I really love, and if you talk about different components in your art moving at different speeds, sort of like different velocities, can you talk about the works here in those terms, or the ones in the other room in those terms? Do you see different velocities at work in these?
I was thinking about these ones today, because I knew I was going to be doing a talk, and I was sort of thinking about maybe things. I didn't want to think too much about it, but some things. And these paintings, to me, they're like a light switches on, and you see the image all at once, and there's a physical thing that happens at the same time as looking at the image, because you become aware of the space almost and the objects within it at the same time. And so in that way, I think that sort of talks to sort of the idea of speed in a way. And then there's different ways of moving through these paintings. There's sort of pathways. Some are sort of more in colour fields, and some are locked in, some can move. Some are about two bodies wanting to be together and abstracting that space, and with a different speed. So I do think it's sort of, I think about this room and the back room as being that the works are made in a way to be looked at in different ways. And I think that is the idea of, even though they all have the tambourine at their core, that they're supposed to be looked at in different ways, because I don't know, that creates sort of a freedom or something. They sort of echo that idea for me, that the individual is many things, not one thing, and about sort of separate, like, you're not part of kind of like labels or identities that culture puts upon you, but you are, you know, you can be different things, and you're things that are free of that. And I feel that as the tambourine in these works represents the body, it talks about the freedom of the body, you know, in a way. And so that freedom, I guess, is something that happens at different, it moves through space in different ways, at different speeds or something, maybe that's what I mean.
Yeah, you weren't referring to these words when you said
it. No.
Not at all, so I don't mean to throw
you. Right, yeah, I mean, what I was thinking of, yeah. I think it was maybe partly to do with the idea of the towel absorbing the water and then like releasing it into space and holding things for a while and holding onto things and yeah, I think it might like that. I think it might be related to that.
When I look at these works, I tend to see them both in terms of different velocities or speeds. I also see them as you're setting up certain tensions. And so with the expectation, because I'm looking at it historically, so I tend to see a geometric abstract painting that has been transgressed. So that there is an attempt for an all-overness, a sort of instantaneous gestalt. And the gestalt is destroyed by, say, with this first work, having these two yellow tambourines. It's also broken up in terms of the two panels. And so for me, there exists this sort of palpitating difference between unity and breaking it up. And I do tend to see it in terms of different speeds of looking, because the wholeness is instantaneous, the breakup and the tensions are slower. And then there is another attempt coming to break, you know, to unify them. And I love the tension because it's very much alive. Because you've entered into the, you know, the threshold of a type of painting that has been so overdone since the 50s that we think, oh no, another geometric abstract painting. And you found a way to enliven it and open it up with these tensions, which to me are very exciting.
I did actually call that one, the second one there, In the Field, and I was thinking of it as like a field, but like it was also a reference to sort of the idea of the colour field painting and the field of colour, and so I did sort of reference the historical idea you're talking about when you that one.
You made some very playful works in terms of fields, where you took the bath towels, you did, I don't know, three or four of them, or four or five, where you took the whole bath towel, ripped it out, and you had the edges. And you had, what, three edges or two edges? And it became almost like a Rothko painting. Were you thinking in those terms?
I was thinking more about the sort of the function I talked to you about how the towel takes the water and absorbs it and then releases it into the environment. And I was sort of thinking about the stacks of towels and about how the water would like rise up through different colours in terms of it sort of evaporating into sort of the surrounding area. And each edge of each towel, each colour sort of represented a different thing. If it was a landscape, an element in a landscape or a body or I always thought about black as being the black space is like it's like form as well as space at the same time, and so yeah, they were just more sort of about sort of that sort of poetic idea, and then I started to sort of cut away the strips from the middle as well that allowed the towels to sort of have a space where the fluid could flow between each one. So that was kind of the progression of those works. So it was actually allowing the water a path to move through, you know.
Yeah, to me they become like landscapes. And if you're talking about the same thing. Inner works in the other room, and I hope everyone has seen the other room. If not, that you will look. It seems to me that in this you're attacking a certain kind of art with your signature now, tambourines, and making it your own. In the other room, I feel very much that you're looking for literal equivalences for what painting is. A painting is a structure. A painting is about color. Sometimes paintings of works of art have plexiglass on them. Sometimes it's like the felt skin. There's a
philosopher at Harvard, D.W. Kroll, that talked about the painting, in formalist terms, is like the skin of the world, and if you go beyond it in any interpretation, you've gone beyond the aesthetic, and so you have some of your washcloths there. It seems that you're being really playful in the other room. Did you think about this at all in terms of breaking up what a painting might be?
I think it's sort of, I tend to sort of take things apart a lot, like as what I do. So taking a painting, like I've made the first paintings with the tambourine, where they were paintings and not with the objects on the front of the tambourine, because like the objects on the front of the tambourine that were trying to sort of grapple and hold and the tambourine. But then I started to move it into the pictorial plane, and then I started to take the picture apart. And then in some of these, there are elements where I was testing out colours for these larger paintings, and it was like a scrap of canvas, and I brought those into them on the surface of the tambourine, so that was sort of bringing back the kind of like deconstructed thing or something, and giving it use again or something. So I don't think I'm really thinking like, oh, it's about deconstructing painting. What I think but I am sort of trying to open up a space where you can go inside and like what you said through the painting.
Mm-hmm.
I think of those little ones in the back as like conversations, and I was.
You mean among the different components?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Especially
yeah.
The two tambourines, because the tambourines are silenced, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so the conversation happens through the pictures. And the glass element is in between them. So, in a lot of ways, the glass element, which is raised, because I was raising the canvas away from the tambourine because I wanted to make a sort of sculptural. I wanted to talk about, in a sculptural way, about touch. And so the fact that the canvases were higher than the tambourine, it sort of put that space into the picture as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the glass part allows you into that conversation.
So it seems to be a barrier, but it opens up, particularly to the structure.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to read something that I took in the lead in a conversation between the two of us, and this I'm reading what Paul had said. For me, art is concerned with the idea of the human condition, which I see as the space between the body and the mind, going back to our conversation. The body is known by its physical presence, and the mind is a space inhibitor, since it is an imagined reality. I find myself trying to find a meeting place or truth of existence between an object body and an image mind. And it seems to me the title of this show you brought in with awareness of the body as perceptor. Would you comment on this?
I thought of, when I chose this title, I thought of the essay, and because, it was about that mind-body separation that you talked about as being kind of something that needed to be resolved, and like as a problem, and that problem was creating the work or something in a way. And the title of the show, I think, did I already say this, but I was thinking of it almost as a defiant thing, like, I see with my body now, like, I'm okay, I'm whole, I'm together, like, but it was also like a question, like, as you always see with your body, so it was, because you see your eyes are part of your body. So I think all my work does it, but I don't know, the idea of connecting those two things is really what the work is, I think, or something.
I think very much so.
Yeah, so that title was very much sort of saying that, and it was kind of like defiant, you know. So because I've written it down, it's some writing I did, and the next line after it is, and now you think it's normal, because it sort of refers to this idea of someone being healed or something, or I didn't feel that I was being healed, or like whatever that is that made this space is still present or something. So.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I don't want to give away the essay in case you all want to run into the back and buy a copy of this book. It's really nice. Complete design. It's great. has a nice interview with Peter Halley, also with Paul Lee. But one of the things about the body mind that really fascinated me is how you break this down. What is this? You referred to it as a station. We've talked about it tonight as a barrier. There is something between the two, and so it led me to Merleau-Ponty, and I'm sure a lot of people in this room have read Merleau-Ponty, but bear with me, let me just go through this very simply. Is Merleau-Ponty was very fascinated with the idea and phenomenology of what is that space between a person or human being, a body, and what the body is seeing. And that he even referred to it as a kind of, he used the word honey. He said it's a honeying of space between the two. And so he was trying to break down this idea that's so important to the French up until the early 20th century of René Descartes, the 17th century philosopher who said, you know, I think, therefore I am. So it's all about the mind and not the body. Mm-hmm. And Merleau-Ponty is trying to say, no. The body has certain precepts. The body a way of reacting. And we certainly know with any number of movements that have developed since the 60s, the woman's movement, they picked up on Merleau-Ponty. You know, I think that the whole idea of the gay movement with race, with ethnicity, other things. And even in the 60s, people were demonstrating with their bodies. So it seems to be you're dealing with a really powerful idea here of how do you think one thing and what is your body doing? What is the connection? And as I went into this, I realized that that space between the two could be like this liquid honey that connects the two of Merleau-Ponty, but it can also be a very explosive, very dangerous space. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that you keep dealing with these tensions, which, from my way of thinking, opens the work up and keeps it very exciting and keeps me wanting to look at the work. It's a way of invigorating it. I think we've talked a little bit. People here may have questions that you would like to ask. Would you be willing to entertain some questions? Yeah. So, not everybody at once, but yeah. Any questions? Yes, Brendan.
Paul, I was going to, I really enjoy all of these ideas that are in the work. How much often are you thinking about that, or when you're making work, are you really just thinking about how more of the visual side? Like, where does that kind of start and stop?
I can't do anything if it doesn't mean something to me. Like, every colour and every line, like, it all has to be part of the meaning of the whole thing. I mean, I think that that's what controls... Well, it controls me, you know?
You work intuitively, then.
I work really intuitively. I don't know. Like, it's sort of... It's already all there. It's like my body is making the work. And I feel that the things to be placed together, it has to make sense, and whatever that sense is a true sense. It's as true as a tambourine is used for one thing, or a towel is used for one thing. It's sort of like, I don't know.
Is there a specific
how it like functions in the world or something? I don't know.
Right. Is there a specific work in here that you could help kind of share some of the meaning that you're thinking about? That's kind of embedded that maybe we're not kind of thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to some students the other day, and I felt like I could talk about ones in the back a lot easier than the ones in the front, because I feel like these feel really clear and like they just are or something, whereas the ones in the back they have more of a question about them, and or they're asking more questions or something, and but this one's called In a Towel, and. I remember when I made it, I just woke up and thought about that and I drew it in my notebook and then I made it, whereas the other ones I make sort of light on the spot. But I thought that this one, how it was containing light and also...
yellow, you think about the yellow as light.
Yeah, and how it was containing light, but there was also light on the surface of it, on the front of it, kind of... The blue kind of became like the towel, and
I don't know, and then after I titled it, I started to think about it more, that title, the idea of being a towel, and like a person being in a towel, and it's like, I don't know, it's sort of, they have to be sort of true in some way, and that's how I
Since you work intuitively, I mean, there are a couple of people I can think of immediately about, they said, of their work, that when it's complete, there's a huge sense of surprise. Mm-hmm. Rothko is one, the French 19th century poet, Charles Baudelaire is another. Do you feel, when you even though you've made a drawing for this, mm-hmm. or when you're working intuitively, that when the work is finished, that something else happens, that there's something is cut from you, and you're surprised by it, or you learn something from it that you did not anticipate?
Yeah, definitely, I think so, and I think it, I guess that's a thing of completeness or about the work or something. But then I can look back at the tambourine with like the shape stuck on the front of it that sort of, then it'll be the same shape as that but just twisted around and made flat or sort of, so the, I think because I have a language, the, I've been building a language that there's something. There's something that feeds into back into itself or something. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's like a self-perpetuating language or something.
Mm-hmm. But his work is so open, it just keeps generating more ideas. I mean, that's what I'm getting from you, is by leaving it open, you generate another idea.
Yeah, I guess the idea is to the working makes more work.
Exactly.
I think it's great when an artist makes a work and there are questions that develop from the work you've made that other works respond to. And I think that's happened with you very definitely. Yeah. The gentleman in the back.
This is such an interesting conversation.
Speak up a little bit.
An interesting conversation between this the body and the mind and how this is produced in the work. And as a sculptor, and now this body of work that we're looking at in this front room that refers so much to painting, can you talk a little bit about the paintings? Like about the quality of the paint? Is you showing your hand sort of part of that action? Do you think of like the physicality of how you're making it and people seeing that physicality as part of this mind-body relationship?
Well, I think that I was interested in like making the surface feel sort of open, even the surface of the painting. Like the paint, it's just like mostly it's just straight onto the canvas and it absorbs into the canvas. And I thought about that in relation to how the ink absorbs into the towel. And the brushstroke, I don't know, I just wanted them to feel sort of just natural, and so they're not, you know, they're not, like, they're not, I want them to feel sort of natural and fresh and free and alive, and that's how I was thinking about the surface and the way that I was painting them, and that's what was important to me, just that. I used oil for the black, and it was kind of a hard thing for me to do because I felt like I was suffocating the canvas by having to put layers of gesso onto it. But it was kind of this thing where I was almost like really hesitant to do it because I just wanted the paint to just bleed into the canvas. So I guess in a lot of ways, in the back there's raw canvas on a lot of them, and so that when there is paint on the canvas, that paint becomes, the act of actually putting the paint on the canvas is almost part of it, and the raw canvas was a space for potential to happen, and that idea of potential space for the painting to happen, I was relating in my head to the potential of touching the tambourine, so it was the idea of potential in two different ways, it was the potential to touch and also the potential to paint or something, so I was thinking about the like painting as like actually sort of an idea. I was aware that it was an idea to be painting, but I wasn't worried that I'm a sculptor, and I just wanted it to read like, I don't know, like natural or something. Does that answer the question?
Question in the back, yes.
I'm curious about the placement of the tambourine, and if Paul, you see them as sort of the culmination of that perimeter form, or the kind of the cueing form, or the answer to that rap.
Well, I usually think of the bottom right-hand corner as the past, and the top left-hand corner is the present. And in everything I do, that's how I make everything. It's
you're saying past and present?
Yeah. Okay. And it sort of guides every decision I make, in a way. I was thinking about past and present with the big and small tambourines, too. It was the small tambourine was either a younger self and an older self, or a younger self looking at an older self, even. And the small tambourines were like projecting into the future. So they're not guided. The tambourines are kind of like the thing that I think that to answer your question, the best is to say that like it's the position of the tambourine. It goes hand in hand with what's happening on the surface of the painting. This doesn't come first. Like that allows them to be together or something. That's their kind of how they can get there, you know. But here as well, I was thinking, oh, these two tambourines can become together in two different ways. They can follow that path, but that path isn't just a path. It's actually a plane, because it exists. The part that you can't see exists behind the kind of the black in a way. So it was two different ways of those tambourines to come together. Together or something, you know? So that's what I was thinking about for that one. And they're actually projecting the light, because I think of that yellow a lot as light, and so they're actually creating the path themselves, you know, like the tambourines are actually illuminating the way to do together by themselves. So I think that is
other questions. Yes.
The use of color is so
important. I can't hear
you. The use of color is so important. As you're saying, there's a source of light. Now I'm seeing in each there is a source of light, but it's so brave that you put just even the one in the back. Red is so strong that you count it. They're so intuitive. If you're looking at there, just drawing you in completely.
Thank you. Well, the red was a hard color to be able to like do it on something, like, and I struggled with the red a little bit because I had to do two coats of paint for it as well, and that was like, but then all the stuff in the red in the back is held together by the red, and I always think about red as desire, and maybe I've been thinking about it as blood a little bit more, and so it's like blood, especially in relationship to the red towel works where I dye all the towels red. And how blood is like the inside, and I'm sort of thinking about that in relation to inside and outside. And this one I called Purple Heart, so I was thinking about the purple, it was like a heartbeat, and this one was one I woke up in the morning and thought it was really cool. And I was thinking about it like it was a heartbeat, and then the Purple Heart, I looked up what Purple Heart medal was, because I knew it was a medal, and it was a medal for bravery. And so I was like, oh my, that's even more perfect, because like I was thinking about, you know, I think about purple as being in between red and blue, so it's like, and it's also like a in between pink and blue, so it's like a gay colour, and it's sort of like red diluted with water, and it's so I was just thinking about it in that way, like a heartbeat or something. So like it was like a sort of, I can give that gay to the gays, like I'll give the gays a medal of courage.
Is this the first time you've used it on this scale?
Yeah, before it was like half the size, and then I made just one more before this show that was called two panels, and then this whole show became the two panels.
Mm-hmm. Question here.
I was just going to say that when you're talking about time, the past and the present, the tambourines also become like clocks, mm-hmm. and that they have
lines of demarcation going around, so they really have to do with time. And that occurred to me when you talked.
Yeah, I did I've done that, divided them up into quarters a lot. And I actually, in the next works in this size, I really want to cut into the back into the tambourine again and have it less, be less like a punctuation and more part of the back into the image more by doing the halfway line and the quarter line. And so I think that that's a nice idea. I made a video once with singles records and I covered like different sections of the records with paper, and that they played, and that it just was noise on the parts of the paper. But that sort of, I like that idea of the record and how that like is like a circle that talks about time. And so, yeah, I do think about time as part of the work. And stuff, so. Acknowledging and accepting the past and bringing it, unifying it with the present is really a big part of what I think about.
I have one more question I want to ask you. Because desire is so important through your early work, and you have the desire of connection with the canvas, the sense of desire with the canvas, and you have the image on the outside that is a type of classical figure, which you also have, almost as if, you know, you can make cameras out of anything. So a can could be made instead of a can into a camera. Then you have the talus, which is almost like a desire for the past, but just the talus is also a desire for usefulness. And you mentioned thread as color of desire. Do you see desire at work in these paintings or in the assemblages in the other room?
Well, I think that in terms of desire being this idea of forming a link between things.
Mm-hmm. You mean within the work of art?
Yeah.
Individual piece.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, desire is desire in them. I think so, because I think that there's like longing in them, and longing and desire are sort of together. I don't know. It's kind of, I think it must be in them.
Where do you see desire in terms of the viewer completing the work in personal terms, not in anyone's sort of pragmatic or laying out certain programmatic ideas of desire?
What you say?
What I'm saying is your desire is open-ended.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was saying in a wordy fashion. You know, do you see with some of these works that the meaning is a kind of open-ended desire to be completed in certain ways by viewers?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like these works, like what I said to you, like about talking about acceptance, and when I feel like I share these works and I put them on the wall and they're part of the world, and they have, you know, I guess that the I don't know, they exist on the wall as images and pictures, and well, not pictures, but sculptures on the wall. So, I don't know, I feel like I'm. In a way, do I see desire in the work? It's in the work, yeah.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that it's internal desire for heart to heart, for relationships. So if the works here deconstruct or break up a work of art into certain constituent functions and parts that play the role of those functions, then there's a kind of desire for them to come together.
Yes.
And here, they have come together. But there is the internal, but there is the external sense of desire. Because you put a towel in a work of art, not in these, but you know, when you have a towel, and there is a sense of desire of usefulness that's open-ended for the
function,
viewer. Function.
It's like a truth, and it speaks to truth.
Yes.
Like a truth of desire, and like when they sort of, the objects are put into the artworks, there is something that is like a truth inside the object that is, you know, that is, I don't know, right? You know, that, I feel like the functionality is really important and of how that can speak to truth. I think that's what I feel. I don't know, like, I'm not thinking about the ego when I'm making the work. Like, I'm trying to, like, connect these objects in a way that can, the viewer can be part of them. So maybe they're kind of like asking for acceptance.
Okay. Well, I would go back to what I was saying earlier about the tension between the visual and the tactile, or the haptic and the you know, optic, as a kind of interplay between the two.
Well, the can and the can't.
Well, thank you.